Case number 07-1375 et al., Connecticut Department of Public Utility Control petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Speck for the petitioner, Mr. Soper for the respondent, Mr. Estes for the interveners.
Good morning.
May
it please the court, I'm Randall Speck. I represent the Connecticut Department. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for my rebuttal, please. The plain language of the Federal Power Act shows that Congress did not intend for FERC to expand its jurisdiction by interpreting the phrase practices affecting rates to override the express reservation to the states of jurisdiction over generation facilities and resource adequacy.
What do you do about our decision in municipalities of Groton?
In Groton, Your Honor.
Isn't that virtually the same case?
No, Your Honor, not at all. I think in that case, the only thing at issue was the deficiency charge,
right,
the amount of the charge. That was clearly regulating the wholesale sale transaction.
What happens in this case if an LSC refuses to buy its share of IRC? What happens?
Under the forward capacity market tariff,
yeah,
that exists in New England now, that's really not possible, Your Honor.
Why? I thought it just meant that they would pay more.
No. In fact, as FERC acknowledges in its brief, the proportion of the ICR that is attributable to a particular load-serving entity, that load-serving entity must provide the generation. That means that if they do not either through a bilateral contract or they haven't purchased their own generation, then it is bought for them, essentially, in the forward capacity market, and they are charged under the tariff for the amount of that capacity.
Right, so they end up paying more.
They will pay the same.
So it is just like Groton. It eventually turns on a payment, right?
Your Honor, everything that FERC does essentially turns on a payment. But in this instance, it's not the payment as an incentive to provide sufficient capacity. In this instance, it's actually the mandate to provide a specific amount.
Let me read you a sentence from Groton. It is sufficient for jurisdictional purposes that the deficiency charge affects the fee that a participant pays for power, irrespective of the objective underlying the charge. In other words, whether it's an incentive or not.
Well, in that case, there were two elements, a deficiency charge that was really just more or less a penalty,
yeah,
and then an allocated amount of what the actual cost of the capacity would be. And the court said that they couldn't make a distinction between the deficiency charge and the allocable charge for jurisdictional purposes. And therefore, that charge, though, was a part of the rate. In that instance, the court was exercising jurisdiction only over the transaction, the wholesale sale transaction. They weren't attempting to tell particular LSEs or particular states how much capacity had to be built. That's a different story.
They're not saying how much has to be built, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor, they are, in effect,
saying how much has to be built. You opened by saying that they could have contracts, they could pay for it. They're not requiring it to be built in that state.
In effect, they are, Your Honor. Let's assume Connecticut in this instance, and it's actually a fact, Connecticut is a separate capacity zone. Connecticut can be designated as a have a local sourcing requirement if the transmission into Connecticut is insufficient. That would mean that Connecticut has to provide that share of the ICR for the state.
And what in the statute prohibits that? The statute talks about compelling enlargement of generating facilities, but it doesn't prohibit enlargement of generating capacities.
They're really essentially the same thing.
No, they're not the same. As you concede in your brief at page 12, the IRC may be satisfied by either generation facilities or demand-side resources. You've conceded that. They don't have to go out and build a new plant.
But 99% of all the capacity that's provided is generation facilities. In effect, as a practical matter, it means generation.
But suppose it just decides not to authorize as much as the commission thinks is needed. Won't that just increase the price?
Are you suggesting that a state?
Yeah, the state just doesn't
authorize. That's a lower ICR?
Yeah, the state just doesn't authorize as much capacity as the market thinks it needs. It doesn't give a permit to build it.
Well, the way that the tariff works.
The commission can't order the state to do that.
The way the tariff works, the capacity will then be purchased for them, in essence.
Right.
Because
And how will they purchase that?
Through the forward capacity market.
Right, and the result will be what? That it will be more expensive, correct? But still, the state isn't, if the state doesn't want to authorize any more capacity, it doesn't have to.
Well, if there is insufficient capacity within the state and the forward capacity market doesn't produce enough capacity, then the price jumps all the way up to twice the cost of a new entrant.
And that's a decision the state can make, right?
It's not a realistic decision, Your Honor.
Well, but it is a legal decision the state can make.
But it's an uneconomic and irrational decision. And the state simply cannot do that.
So what do you want? How would you run this system? What's your alternative?
Well, Your Honor, we did.
You want the ISO to do this?
No, Your Honor.
I think so.
The states can do it. And if you look at JA 146 and 147, that is a process that was worked out by the states in New England cooperatively that outlines a process by which the states would designate the ICR for the region.
Why isn't your argument asking us to try and turn back time? I mean, it seems to me that you're fundamentally upset about the Maine public utility case, the Groton case, and Mississippi Industries. I mean, the camel's tent, the camel's head is under the tent, and it's getting larger, right? I mean,
those cases, including Mississippi Industries, the Groton case, the Maine PUC case, all involved instances when FERC was regulating a wholesale sale transaction. They weren't regulating the amount of the capacity that had to be purchased.
Well, they were taking cognizance of the fact that there is a link between price and capacity, right? And once you acknowledge that link, what's wrong? And we've said there's nothing wrong with regulating capacity.
The link is quite attenuated in this instance, Your Honor.
Boy, I thought you don't have to ask too many questions to exhaust my knowledge of economics, but I thought supply and demand was kind of a basic one, right?
Well, in the forward capacity market, the whole objective of the forward capacity market was to buy capacity 3 years in advance so that you could have competition from new entrants, and that new entrants anticipating that they were going to provide capacity in 3 years.
What was the purpose of that? Why? Why are they regulating capacity?
They're regulating the price of capacity, Your Honor. They're not regulating
why?
The amount.
Why are they regulating the price of capacity?
In order to assure that there is adequate capacity in the region.
Right.
They're perfectly
capacity
entitled.
Capacity and price are inextricably linked here.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because in Maine PUC, the court made a real distinction between ICR, which was an exogenously determined input, and the capacity market itself. And the court said it can have jurisdiction over the capacity market And the process that that FERC goes through and ISO goes through in order to set the capacity price. But ICR is a completely separate, exogenously determined input.
But there's a really, for the auction, there's really only two things, right? There's how much ICR has to be provided and who will pay, what price will that be provided at, right? If you lowered the amount of ICR, presumably the price would go down. If you raise the amount of ICR, the price will go up.
Over the long run, Your Honor.
No, in the auction.
In a particular auction?
Yeah.
That might be true in a particular auction.
Right.
But it would not be true over the long run.
Well, but in every auction, in order to get supply and demand meeting, you have to have a price, right? And the isn't that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you have to have the market clear, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the higher in a particular auction, because of whatever the situation is for that period three years out, you're nodding, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. So
I understand you.
All right. Under those circumstances, if the amount of ICR demanded were to increase, just hypothetically, if you were to increase by 5%, prices would go up. Maybe not 5%, depending upon elasticities, but nonetheless, it would go up, wouldn't it?
Well, the whole idea was that by purchasing the capacity 3 years in advance, yes, you do get an elasticity of supply. So that the variation from auction to auction would be very,
but
very
I'm
little.
About in any individual
in any particular auction,
right,
you would have some variation. It might be minor, but there might
whatever
be some variation.
There would be a variation, that is, in which ICR would be directly related to the price.
As long as the supply curve is not completely flat.
Well, that's fine, but do you think, is there any circumstance under which you think that could possibly be the case?
Completely flat, probably not,
right,
as a practical matter. But nevertheless, Your Honor, I believe it is clear that the statute requires much more of FERC than it's provided thus far. FERC hangs its hat on the affecting practices language. And even if you concede that ICR has an effect on the price, you still must overcome the provision in the statute that says it has to be specifically provided. And affecting rates is not a specific provision.
The bottom line is that the Commission can't use the pricing mechanism to create incentives for the creation of new capacity, right?
And I think that's what...
Is that your position?
To some extent, that's what Maine Public Utilities says, Your Honor. They did make a distinction there between a mandate and an incentive. And our position is that ICR is a mandate. You must have and must provide a specific amount of capacity.
You think that's a mandate directed to the state?
It is definitely, Your Honor. Yes, indeed.
But there's nothing in it that says that. Your position is that that's the inevitable result of it?
Yes.
But because there is no mandate, correct?
Well, as FERC says repeatedly in its brief, the amount of the ICR is what the LSE must provide. It is a mandate. I don't know how it can be described in any other way.
That's a mandate.
They don't have
directed
to
the LSE. It's not.
But ultimately, each LSE is located in a state. A state is a local sourcing, has a local sourcing requirement.
In fact, isn't it true, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but isn't it true that you can't even participate in the auction without prior permission from the state to provide the new capacity?
That's not quite true, Your Honor. At some point, you would have to show that you've achieved a permit. If you're a new entrant,
so it is true.
Eventually you will have to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's another way the state has control over this, right?
Through the permitting process, yes, Your Honor. But again, if the alternative is to pay for every megawatt of capacity in the state, you pay twice as much as the cost of new entry. That is such an onerous penalty. It is completely uneconomic and completely impractical. The state has really no choice at that point. And that's illustrated by what's happened in Connecticut. Connecticut, recognizing this problem, went out and purchased more capacity, authorized the building of new capacity, because they had to meet those ICR requirements. And that's really, realistically, what every state is going to face. Plus, the real problem here comes in the state's inability to control its own resources. deciding, for instance, how much it wants to use energy efficiency, how much it's expecting its load growth to be over time. Are they going to let FERC decide that, or do they decide that themselves as a matter of local policy? These are resource adequacy issues.
Well, that's the demand side part that I thought was another way of achieving ICR.
A part of it is.
So FERC's not saying you can't do that. In fact, FERC's saying you can do that.
Yes, you can do that, but if they set the ICR too high,
but if you want
at a level that can't be achieved with energy efficiency and
right,
the way that the state is planned.
You just said that FERC was preventing you from using alternative methods like energy efficiency. That doesn't seem to be consistent with what you just said.
Well, it depends on the level of the ICR, Your Honor. If the ICR is set at a level, let's assume FERC assumes, and ISO assumes, that load growth is going to be 3% next year. The state says we've got energy efficiency programs. We don't think it's going to be more than 0.5% next year. Nevertheless, because the ICR comes in, you're going to have capacity up to 3%. That means you're going to have to go out there and build that capacity, even if you don't need it. That's the point that Ohio made in its amicus brief, Your Honor. And these are really serious questions for the states.
If it turns out that you do need it, then you're going to have to buy it. If we didn't have this system and you've miscalculated, you're going to have to buy it anyway, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Otherwise, the whole grid goes down. Right?
But no, Your Honor, this isn't a doomsday scenario.
Well, if you miscalculate and you don't provide enough, then what happens?
There may have to be temporary rolling blackouts on
that's
the hottest day of the summer.
Yes, that's right.
It's not going to be like the grid's going to go down. Okay. That's not the possibility. My time is up, Your Honor, and I had intended to reserve some. Thank you.
Okay. May it please the court. This case is about wholesale rates. The commission tells a LSE, which is a jurisdictional wholesaler, what part of its rate is. The state of Connecticut could tomorrow say, we're not going to build any more generation at all. And the commission can't order Connecticut to do anything. The only thing the commission can do is affects the rate and the
what
price.
Would be the consequence? That would just, what would that, what it, would be the consequence of that?
It would raise the price.
And suppose a LSE decides not to buy its share?
I think we could order an LSE to comply with the tariff and do what it's supposed to do under the tariff. Because LSE is a jurisdictional entity.
Well, what about their argument that, look, the consequences of the state not authorizing it are so onerous, requires paying double the entry price, that it's in fact a mandate?
If there's a situation where the state is concerned about the level of ICR and feels it's unreasonable, the state can appeal that to this court. The commission will review it. The commission will make a decision about it. If the state believes that the level of ICR is unreasonable and the commission has okayed that, Connecticut, anybody else, could bring that to this court and you could tell us whether the commission's decision was reasonable. But that doesn't deprive us of jurisdiction under wholesale rates. This court, as you pointed out, in Groton and in Mississippi, says capacity costs are a large component.
But what are the limits on that? What is it that FERC cannot do with respect to capacity?
Well, I think this is a case where we're in a continuum here. There's certain things that are clearly within wholesale rates. There's certain things that the statute clearly tells us we can't do.
And that's what I want to know.
We certainly can't tell Connecticut to build jurisdiction. Within the continuum, what this court has said was that if the commission's regulating wholesale rates, if it has an incidental effect on non-jurisdictional matters or in state matters, that's okay.
You're still telling us what FERC can do. I want to know what FERC can't do in this one end of the continuum. I think you said – I didn't quite hear you.
Well, we can't order the state to build
a new power plant. Is there anything else you can't do short of that?
I can't think of anything offhand, but
– What does that tell us about the way the law has developed in this area then?
Well,
it seems to be a one-sided slide towards regulation of capacity, doesn't it? And isn't that a problem?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because first of all, in 1987, this court first held that capacity costs were part of wholesale rates.
That was the nose under the tent.
That was the nose. In the Groton case.
That was the head.
That was the head.
And now you're asking to have the camel come inside the tent altogether.
No, I think on the continuum, there are still part of the camel that is regulated by the states, and we're not interested in that part of the camel.
That's the tail, I imagine, right? You've given the states the butt or the tail, right?
This is the way the Congress set up jurisdiction for the commission, and this is the way the courts have looked at jurisdiction.
I mean, I know that's the way the courts have looked at it. Is that the way Congress set it up?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. Congress said that the commission has jurisdiction over wholesale rates. Now, that's the one end of the continuum.
Right.
So the question is, what's a wholesale rate? Well, this is on the other end of the camel, because this is capacity costs, which the court and the commission have long recognized are an essential part of wholesale rates. This is just, even Mr. Speck admits, at worst, this is a part of a rate formula where you stick in the number that's been developed, and it goes to the amount of the rate,
Why isn't this just FERC doing indirectly that which it cannot do directly, and that is it's ordering the states to create a certain capacity level because it works better?
Well, first of all, there are two different ways to look to define capacity. The commission has explained here the kind of capacity it is talking about here is the capacity on the wholesale system. It doesn't care how the states, and has no authority over how the states regulate their actual capacity, giving them electricity. They can build generation. They can do demand response. And, in fact, Connecticut has. They can have bilateral contracts. That's all matters that are left to the states. And that comes within regulating generating facilities. But with the wholesale rate matters, that is a matter, even if it has an effect on what the states do, that's a matter that Congress entrusted to FERC.
Could you go back to this question we were talking about earlier about what happens if the state refuses to authorize enough generation capacity? You say in your reply brief that, this would result in double the cost of new entry, right?
Well, they allege that, yes.
Is that true?
I think it would be. If they, I don't know for sure. I don't think we have any record on that. But there's no doubt the cost.
Work? I mean,
there's no doubt the cost would go up.
The cost would go up.
But this is exactly the situation that the court dealt with in Groton. You were slapped with a deficiency charge because you didn't supply sufficient capacity to Neepool, the predecessor of ISNO New England.
Possible the rate could go so high as to no longer be just and reasonable?
Absolutely. And if that's the case, the commission would certainly not approve a rate that was not just and reasonable.
So,
and if the commission did approve a rate that was not just and reasonable, I'm sure this court would tell it was wrong.
So double the cost of new entry. Is that a just and reasonable rate?
It depends on the circumstances, Your Honor.
I see.
How does it get that high?
Well, that's actually where it's, Mr. Estes could probably explain this a little better than I can, but that's where it's set initially in terms of the settlement, and then it's bidded down in the capacity auction.
Right.
And it got down to way below, in the two auctions we've had so far, it got down to way below that. But that's just the way the federal, the forward capacity market set up, which was affirmed by the court in Central Maine.
So your answer then to their concern that if the state decides not to authorize sufficient capacity, that the way to deal with that concern is if the rate that results from that is too high, they can challenge that?
Absolutely.
It's not just unreasonable. By the way, is it also true that you can't even participate in this auction without a permit to build the capacity?
I don't know if that's true, Your Honor. At any rate, since this matter.
Do you think this case is controlled by Groton?
I think it's absolutely controlled by Groton. I think it's controlled by Mississippi, Groton, and then you have the later cases where this court has said even in, for example, the National Association case a few years ago involving interconnection facilities, where Judge Williams said, yeah, you can. This affects facilities. It can affect state matters such as eminent domain, but it's still FERC regulating the transaction, and that's the key. It's FERC regulating the transaction that affects the wholesale rate, and that's exactly what we're doing here. We're not regulating generation, which the statute says we can't do. We're regulating a wholesale transaction. And the way this has developed in the course of the history of New England, as the briefs point out, it's always been done on an integrated basis. It's not been done by the individual states. And in fact, in the Mississippi case, which also involved capacity courts, the court mentioned that in a case where you're dealing with different states, the federal regulator is kind of the honest broker because it doesn't have a slant in one state's view or the other, whereas a state's interest, obviously, is to make its particular rates lower. This is an integrated system, a multi-state system, and it, contrary to what Mr. Speck says, it's always been done this way. And the states have never actually proposed what they would do, how they would work. They've never given an actual, not that I think it would matter. And I think it's important to realize the commission certainly is concerned with what the states say. The commission is very solicitous of the states. But this is simply a matter where the states have their input, but we have to look at the wholesale rate. Capacity costs are simply part of the wholesale rate.
What do you do with Section 215 Savings Clause?
The Section 215 Savings Clause is completely irrelevant. In Section 215, Congress expanded the
Why isn't this requiring compliance with adequacy?
In Section 215, Congress expanded the Commission's reliability jurisdiction. And then the Savings Clause said, under this subsection, in other words, within the reliability jurisdiction, here are some things you can't do. There's no notion that they meant that Congress had any intention of stripping away the rate jurisdiction, which it has long ago granted FERC and which the courts have long ago explained the extent of.
You know whether that argument was raised below?
It was the...
Not your argument, but...
No, I understand. The 215 argument was raised briefly on rehearing by Connecticut. It's in a 27-page rehearing, I think it's one paragraph. The commission didn't directly address it because the commission was saying from the very beginning this is a 201, 205, 206 rate case, and it didn't feel necessary to specifically address that. It addressed 201, which was the basic focus of Connecticut's argument, that somehow under 201 we were violating 201 by regulating generation facilities, and the point was, no, we weren't. We're merely regulating the wholesale rate, that the ICR is a portion of the capacity charge. It's part of the wholesale rate, and therefore, well within the continuum of jurisdiction, it's well within the wholesale rate side, not in the state side.
The commission's position is that all it has to do, right, is show that it's regulating a practice that affects rates. It doesn't have to also show that it's not regulating generation.
Well, those are the two ends we really know for sure. I mean, there could look. That's what Chevron is really for. This is an area Congress has not spoken to directly. The commission's jurisdiction should be upheld as long as the commission reasonably explained what its jurisdiction is, and it has done that here. There may well be situations further on the continuum where there is too much interference with the state and the court.
The words that are ambiguous is quote, jurisdiction over facilities used for the generation. That's the ambiguity, those words.
No, I think those words are pretty plain. I think what the commission was saying, that the ambiguous part is how far does our wholesale rate jurisdiction go?
But you have a proviso in here which has to be interpreted too.
Right, and
otherwise, I mean, if you only look at the language that authorizes the commission's action, you could end up writing this language out of the statute. So the question is, how do we interpret this proviso, right?
Right, and the commission said that, that the commission addressed that in some detail in the orders, and said the proviso 201 means regulating generating facilities, and although it didn't define what that meant, it said we are not doing that here because we are not ordering anybody to do anything about generating facilities. We are strictly in the wholesale rate area that the court has told us is part of our jurisdiction and has said that for 20 years.
Anything else, Tom? Okay.
Thank you. There are no further questions.
No, thank you.
May it please the court. Let me try and address your questions. I'll start with two times cone. The way the auction works.
I'm sorry, you'll start with what?
Two times cone. The figure that Mr. Speck is complaining his client would have to pay if the auction were to run without any additional facilities in Connecticut. The auction starts at this level by settlement approved by this by the commission and affirmed by this court in Maine PUC, supported by Mr. Speck's client, actually, a level that was found to be just and reasonable by the commission for purposes of the design of the auction. It then descends, and as the price descends, quantity drops out. Quantity drives the price in any individual auction. At some point, price and quantity match. The quantity is what is being targeted, and the auction stops. What Mr. Speck is positing is that after perhaps a series of auctions, when Connecticut has refused to grant permits for new generation, shall we say? And by the way, I think the answer is the permits have to be obtained, but it can be after the auction. If they're denied, the winning bidder who was trying to build new generation is at risk of penalties, but there's no forcing of granting of permits. I think that's the time sequence. But back to the question of the two times cone, the way this works is that, excuse me, at some point, the Connecticut will eventually run short of resources that are local, and the ISO will conclude if you don't build more resources, being generation or add demand response, or build transmission to let generation come in from outside, you're causing a reliability problem for the entire Eastern interconnection, including Canada. At that point, the auction could fail in the sense that there would not be any supply that would come in even at two times cone, and that is the price. The price could stick there for an extended period of time, perhaps, but that is an appropriate outcome, I would submit to you. And if it's too high,
just mechanically, how does that work?
Well, the auctioneer would call out, you know, the question, two times cone, what volumes come, and not enough volumes would come.
Okay, so then the price becomes two times cone.
Right.
I see.
And,
and the FERC has determined that price to be just and reasonable?
Right. And if there ever were a question on direct review of whether it's just and reasonable, that question could be called to this court. But it is not a jurisdictional limitation. It cannot possibly be a plausible interpretation of Congress's intent that when the incentive created by this market becomes powerful and starts to work, that there's some sort of jurisdictional circuit breaker that flips over and all of a sudden the states have authority over this question. Now,
is it likely, I take it, tell me if this is wrong, is a state likely to respond to this auction by ensuring the sufficient capacity just by adding generation capacity? Aren't there many other things it can do?
Yes, Your Honor. Right. It can engage in demand response programs in kind of an organized way. It can build more transmission, which is really the answer to Mr. Speck's hypothetical. If it's difficult to build transmission in Connecticut because of NIMBYism, that's a problem that has to be overcome, but it will cost money. And if the federal government, through its wholesale rate-setting authority, needs to create just and reasonable incentives subject to this court's review to prompt action to keep the lights on, that's squarely within the province of the agency's authority granted by Congress. And it's not...
Maybe you can answer the question I asked,
it's
Mr.
Not
Sanford.
What? Wait, just,
I'm sorry.
Just finish your answer. It's not what?
Yes.
You just finish your sentence.
It's not a usurpation of state authority. It's well within the rate authority that was granted by the commission. I was about to say it's not the camel climbing into the tent.
What are the limits on the rate authority then? What is FERC forbidden from doing here?
Let me go back to the camel for a second to set the stage for that, if I may, Your Honor.
I'm not sure this is going to be very good.
No, because there's a difference between a physical camel which the states regulate, and, shall we say, the rates the camel charges to cross the desert. And what we're talking about here is economic regulation of the of a facility's output, the revenue stream at wholesale that this agency regulates to be just and reasonable. And the way we got here to begin with is there were flaws in New England's markets. They were not producing enough revenue to keep the lights on and attract and maintain resources. So the commission introduced a supplemental revenue stream through the capacity market. But it is a notional entity, this capacity market. It exists in FERC rate making. The ISO runs a market. But capacity is, in a sense, an abstract thing. It can be supplied in a number of different ways. And what happens, to answer one of the other questions, if an LSE just sort of doesn't do anything to deal with its obligations, it pays money. That's all that ever happens under this construct.
It's just like Groton, right?
Yes, it is. And Mississippi Industries in its own way. It has always been the case with New England Power Pool since it was created, and was created, mind you, to achieve efficiencies in interconnection, which the Supreme Court talked about in Gainesville, that are not available if a state chooses to island itself. By relying on its neighbors and having its neighbors rely on it, Connecticut achieves efficiencies. But it can meet its load with fewer resources, and so can the entire region, and so can Canada. But as it
pause, I'm sorry, something you
sure
said confused me. You said that this auction is only notional.
Is capacity it? Is in a sense a notional product.
But this auction ends up, the people who participate in the auction in the end are responsible for providing what they've offered. Is that not true or true?
There is a contract, in a sense, between the winners of the auction and the ISO for the provision of capacity. And if it involves new generation, they have to go try and fulfill their obligation through construction, through the gates of the state for police power protection. But that's just as it always was. When the commission in its old...
What happens if the state says no? What happens then?
Then the winning bidder cannot perform, and he has to pay penalties. And that's all that happens.
They want a permit ahead of time.
Well, if they could get it. But
why, if they can't get it, why would they bid?
They might think the risk is manageable. But, the permitting generation can be quite involved. And we can check. And if I'm wrong about this, that the permit can lag the winning bid, we'll get back to you with a letter. But I think that's the case. But the ultimate answer to the camel hypothetical, I submit to you, is the commission is regulating the dollar stream for wholesale generation, and that's what it's always done. And I can posit an example where a quantity of capacity was regulated by this commission entirely outside of this context. If you have an old-style contract for the provision of power on a cost-based basis 30 years ago, the commission approved that contract, and there would more likely than not be a specific capacity level dictated in that contract that dictated a capacity payment, like the demand charge this court addressed just Friday in Alcoa. And that would involve dividing fixed costs by a quantity, and the quantity would be the amount purchased. And that is essentially what we're dealing with here. It's historic rate jurisdiction. It is not facilities jurisdiction. It is well within the span of Chevron Step 2 deference. I have no further questions. If there are no further questions, I have no further remarks.
I'm glad you have no further questions.
Hopefully I have answers.
Thank you. Does Tishon have any time left? Okay, you can take 2 minutes if you'd like it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Just very briefly, I would suggest going back to the statute, which
before
is...
Before we do that, what about, he says, look, you said when you were up here before, this forces the state to build authorized generation, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
He says, no, it doesn't, because most likely what's going to happen with most of this is that the new capacity will be provided, much of the capacity can be provided through techniques other than new generation. And in any event, it'll just mean a higher price, and the commission has already found that to be just and reasonable, and if it isn't, you can challenge it here.
It's certainly
what's
not.
What's the matter with all that?
Well, it's certainly not true, Your Honor, that most of the capacity, or even a substantial portion of the capacity,
the states have the option of supplying the capacity through demand. What's it called?
Page 11 of your
demand response.
Demand response, or through more transmission.
Your Honor,
right?
If you look at Connecticut's
that's
experience,
true, isn't it?
That's not true, Your Honor.
It's not?
If you look at Connecticut's experience when they went out to
Connecticut could not do that.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. When Connecticut went out to get additional new capacity. It issued an RFP.
Do you say in your brief that the commission's wrong on this point? I'm just curious.
No, Your Honor. I'm saying as a practical matter, when Connecticut went out to get new capacity, it asked everybody for demand response, for generation, for everything else. 99% was generation. Less than 1% was demand response. So certainly it is a
record?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Certainly that's a possibility. It's also always a theoretical possibility. The other problem
is, what about buying it somewhere else?
That doesn't help, Your Honor, if the generation has to be located in Connecticut. And if you're a local sourcing.
Well, we just heard that you can provide for your ICR by purchasing it from somewhere else.
As long as it's in Connecticut. If you're a capacity zone like Connecticut is, where you have a local sourcing requirement, that means you have to have a specified amount of capacity in Connecticut. And transmission is not the solution necessarily from Connecticut's standpoint, because Connecticut doesn't control the transmission lines from Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Those have to be approved by others. It's not something we can engage in self-help and take care of ourselves. So I suggest again, we should go back to the statute itself, the proviso that we mentioned once before. It's not just your regular ordinary proviso. The statute says the only exceptions when FERC may regulate generation facilities or when it is specifically provided. I would submit, Your Honor,
I take you back to Groton.
Your Honor, Groton did not address this issue. Groton did not address this issue. And respectfully, Your Honor, I would again say that Groton addressed only the capacity charge, not the amount of capacity, which is a significantly different.
Wasn't the argument there that the capacity charge created an incentive or forced the development of generation? It was the same argument.
But the FERC in that instance, though, Your Honor, was focusing on and regulating only the capacity charge. They weren't telling anybody how much capacity was necessary, nor did they in Mississippi Industries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both, or all three of you. The case is submitted.